The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Hello there. Welcome back to First Take, coming to you live from above the Heineken River Deck at Pier 17. A gorgeous day here in New York City. The Packers kicked off their third phase of OTAs this week, and for the first time ever, Aaron Rodgers was a no-show. The Packers quarterback has made it clear that he wants out of Green Bay, so he had no reason to show up for the voluntary workout. So with that being said, a trade is clearly still a possibility. Here's more from Rodgers last night with Kenny Mayne.
I think sometimes people forget what really makes an organization. And, you know, history is important. You know, legacy of so many people who've come before you. But the people, that's the most important thing. The people make an organization. People make a business. And sometimes that gets forgotten. You know, culture is built brick by brick. The foundation of it by the people, you know, not by the organization, not by the building, not by the corporation. It's built by the people.
It's a Teddy Tuesday. Three-time Super Bowl champ Teddy Bruschi joining us now. Hey, how we doing?
Hey.
Like Teddy
What's
Tuesday.
What's up, everybody? Good to see everyone.
That's what it is. It's always good to have him on the show. All right, Stephen A., you're up first, though. Should Green Bay fire their GM to keep their MVP?
Wouldn't bother me one bit. That's my perfect answer to that question. Wouldn't bother me one bit. Now, that's a big, big deal coming from me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not interested in people losing their job. As far as I'm concerned, everybody that get paid, the more the merrier, okay? You got families to take care of, people to take care of, et cetera, et cetera, mortgages to pay, all of that other stuff. I'm not advocating that Gutekunst be without a job. You don't need to be in Green Bay. You have a guy that is the face of the franchise and an iconic figure, one of the all-time greats, and he needs to get to a point where he says he wants out in order for you to recognize that you should have treated him with more respect, that you should have appreciated him a little bit more, that you shouldn't have treated him as if he were just another guy. And by the way, Mark Murphy shouldn't be let off the hook either. Because he's the de facto, basically, chairman, of, you know, the guy running. I mean, it's a publicly owned franchise, but he's the guy that's commissioned to run the franchise. He's been there. He was there when Ted Thompson's there. He was there now that Brian Gutekunst is there. What's the common denominator? Him, Mark Murphy, basically fostering this mentality that all of you are just parts to be utilized at our discretion. We don't particularly give a damn about you. And the reason I say that is only because of Aaron Rodgers. I don't know about anybody else. Don't care. If you've got a guy that is that great, that you put that and you shoulder that much of the responsibility towards him, and he did what he has done for you, keeping you relevant for the last decade, and on numerous occasions spanning years, he's been able to say how he feels disrespected. I told you I have it on good authority. I told y'all this before on several occasions. I've been right on the show. I have it on very good authority.
What?
Molly, what Stephen A. says on good authority,
listen.
I just urge people to read between the lines.
That's right.
Read just a little bit.
Please do. I have it on very good authority. The man walked into their office, and they told him, shut up and play, essentially. You play, we run the organization. Now get the hell out of here. They dismissed him like that. And Teddy knows football the way that he does. And if he doesn't know, there's a whole bunch of other people. Yeah, all of y'all know. He was mistreated. He was disrespected. You don't come back from that. If you don't know how to treat people who produce for you, you shouldn't be in that position.
The short answer is, would I fire Gutekunst to keep Rodgers is yes. The short answer is yes, because Gutekunst is a good GM. I'd even say a very good GM.
We don't know that.
And oh, I think so. I mean, he brought
in Aaron Rodgers, how good would they be?
He got rid of a coach who'd won a Super Bowl, but the league seemed to have passed him by. He brought in a coach. They went 13-3. Rodgers learned the system really well and then had an MVP season and went 13-3 again and played in the championship game. Took the ball out of his hand. That's a blunder. But it was better than McCarthy, I think, in recent years. And also, Gutekunst recognized that in a hard cap league, when you have a quarterback who can compensate for other deficiencies, you can spend resources elsewhere. So he built a defense. It's a well-rounded, well-built team. But I wouldn't say he's a great GM yet. He's a good one. There is a difference between good and great. Aaron Rodgers is a great quarterback. It is harder to replace Aaron Rodgers with someone than Gutekunst with someone. So the short answer is yeah. If I had good information that I could keep Aaron Rodgers by getting rid of the GM, I'd get rid of the GM. I just think that, Stephen A., what you're really talking about is Gutekunst, his moves tell me he had a lot of respect for Rodgers the player, but what he didn't respect was Rodgers the person. And Rodgers feels disrespected as a person. But I think there are ways to fix that. As I said, you come with your hat in one hand and a contract in the other. You eat your hat in front of them. Sorry, the happy Gilmore to Chubbs. You're smart, I'm stupid. You're right, I'm wrong. You're tall, I'm short. Whatever you want to do. You know, you're good looking, I'm not very attractive. And please take the most money ever guaranteed to a quarterback. I think at a certain point, it requires humility from Gutekunst to keep this together. And if he shows enough of it, I think it could work.
Yeah, I'm with you, Max, on that in terms of good, not great, because a great GM would have realized how things change in this NFL landscape, and now sometimes you don't do what's best for the organization, you do what's best for the quarterback, because you got to keep these guys happy, you got to keep these guys respected, you got to know about their feelings and what your moves and what your words will do, because what they realize is this: they know they have power. And you heard Rodgers talk about legacy and those type of things, and he is very aware about where he is in terms of the all-time greats, and he's very aware of what happened to one of those all-time greats in terms of Brett Favre, the way that he left, because he was the one that was brought in. So you try to bring in someone else, and then all of a sudden it's unfixable. And Stephen A's also right, because I mean, in a way, you know, Gutekunst has to go, but I say this, it may not be enough, because the problem is also the other quarterback that's in the room. It's so messed up there now. You've got a quarterback that feels disrespected, but you also have this other first-round quarterback that you traded up for that's there. So what do you do with him? Because I don't think Rodgers is going there if love is there. Now, Rodgers has a good relationship with him. I mean, he talked about it with Kenny Mayne last night. Loves the kid. He'll probably mentor the kid no matter where he goes. Good relationship, but I just can't have you in the same room as me because this is my job. And that's how these quarterbacks, these alpha males, these guys that have memories like elephants that never forget, that's how they handle these things, and they take things personally. And so Rodgers is definitely that man that I think it may be too messed up. He's out of there. It'd have to take a lot of what you're talking about, Max. Come on, bring in Julio Jones in here. Get rid of Gutekunst. Give me a public apology. Trade Jordan Love. It would take a lot. But Rodgers looked like a man that was done with Green Bay.
You're damn right he's done. And he should be done. And this is the thing, you know, and you can appreciate what I'm about to say, Teddy, because I'm about to say something that's near and dear to your heart. We got too many damn people in the NFL thinking they Bill Belichick. You're not him. You're not him.
Even Belichick's Belichick
wait,
anymore.
Wait, no. That's not true. Hold on for a second. Hold on your horses here. Long before Tom Brady ever arrived, Bill Belichick was considered an elite defensive mind with two Super Bowl championships on his resume. Tom Brady comes. He sits there and says, Drew Bledsoe, sit down. First year, he puts Tom Brady at the helm. They win the chip. They win the chip three times in 4 years, if I remember correctly. So you're talking about a guy that had such impeccable credentials long before he may have adopted this mentality. Well, I did it just like Tom Brady did it or whatever.
Yeah, and with that, Yeah, and if that buys you a little bit of time, quarterback still. It took two decades for Brady to eventually say, need this anymore. But Aaron Rodgers is on a quicker scale, possibly Stephen A., because Gutekunst, he's looking at him and be like, listen, man.
That's what I'm talking about, Gutekunst. That's why I said what I said. I was getting the Gutekunst. You have too many coaches, too many executives. They want to act like they the Bill Belichick without the resume. They didn't do it yet.
But the point point about Belichick is not being Belichick anymore is the fact is, knowing what we know now, if Kraft could redo it, you think he's getting rid of Brady or Belichick?
Not fair.
Think about
Not fair. Not fair.
Think about that for a second.
That's not fair.
That's a whole other debate.
That's only not fair because of COVID. If you had an argument, if you had the season that didn't involve COVID,
I'm not
you might have a point. But you can't say with COVID.
I'm not.
When nine players don't even show up to play defense.
Okay, but given all the you're right. But given all the information we have now, whatever we have, we have. If Robert Kraft could redo it, do you think he keeps Brady over Belichick? And my point is simply that that's a good question.
Are you asking Teddy that? He doesn't have the information.
And that's
you don't have enough information. You don't have enough information.
The information will be, this is a big year, this year. This, you'll gather some more information for that. Kraft can't make that decision based on what he's seen so far. Stephen A's correct.
Well, he made the decision.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes. So they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's lectricebikes.com. Here's the deal, y'all. So yesterday, when reached by phone by Shannon Sharp on FS1's Undisputed, Falcons wide receiver Julio Jones is heard responding, I'm out of here, and right now, I want to win in regard to leaving the Falcons organization. Max?
Yep.
How should his quarterback, Matt Ryan, feel about this?
It never occurred to me that this is a shot at Matt Ryan or a reaction to Matt Ryan. It's a reaction to the organization who, you know, they're 11-5. They're in the Super Bowl with an enormous lead, and Matt Ryan could have played better. Still they were playing it safe. It turned out to be unsafe. Then they go 10-6. Then they're under 500. Then they're way under 500. They're trending in the wrong direction. And in terms of Matt Ryan, they restructured his deal because of cap issues, but that means he gets paid in order to alleviate some of the cap issues for the team. And we all know, given Julio Jones's trade value plus age, plus the fact that he's not a quarterback, they're not going to redo his deal to create room. They're going to trade him. So Matt Ryan got his money. He's dealing in the reality of a business, a hard cap league. And I think he probably feels like, realistically, this is what was going to happen. I don't hear Julio Jones's comments as directed at Matt Ryan. I see it directed at the organization.
I'm not saying his comments were directed at Matt Ryan, but the question is, how should Matt Ryan feel about all of this? And if I'm Matt Ryan, I'm feeling insufficient. I'm feeling like I let Julio Jones down. Because when you can throw the football and fling that thing the way that Matt Ryan can, and a star wide receiver, an all-world wide receiver who spent the previous 6 years catching for at least 1,394 yards and a minimum of 83 receptions. The previous 6 years before suffering that hamstring injury last year, we only played 99 games. The bottom line is, when that dude wants out, that's a reflection on you by virtue of the position that he plays. Think about what, even though Julio Jones' personality doesn't fit this, think about what we say about wide receivers. Think about how they're called prima donnas. I know that's not him.
Not him.
Coming out of Alabama, he doesn't roll like that, all that other stuff. But it still matters to him winning. It still matters to him to get the football. It still matters to him who's throwing him the damn football. For him to say, I want out, if I'm Matt Ryan, I definitely feel some shade is being thrown on me. And, oh, by the way, it might be justified because T.I. came on this show. T.I. Now, he ain't a football player, but T.I. is a, you know, he's a native of Atlanta. He's a huge Falcons fan. He came on this show and said, I give Matt Ryan away. It's emblematic of what people in the ATL feel about Matty Ice at this point. We can't ignore that.
T.I., so you're saying Matt Ryan should look at Julio Jones and say, now, why you want to go and do that?
That's right.
Why
you want to go and do that? Look, since Shanahan left, that
live
offense.
Your life.
That offense.
That's a good one.
Like Shanahan knew what he was doing, how to make use of Julio Jones, right? And if he's not going to getting a bunch of targets, boy, that offense better be high flying. That better be because there's so much attention drawn his way. It hasn't been the same since Shanahan left. The organization, like, you know, it looked at that moment when they went to the Super Bowl like the NFC is going to have to deal with this offense for the next 5 years. And they didn't.
Well, there's been a coaching issue because there's been a collapse. But I just want to reiterate again, he has diva wide receiver talent, and he's not a diva. That's why he is such a catch.
Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
This is going to be fun. Joining us now ahead of his pay-per-view exhibition bout against who? Floyd Money Mayweather. On June 6th at the Hard Rock in Miami is Logan Paul. Logan, thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Hey, how are you? Yeah, thanks for having me. Hey, guys.
I'm good. Hey, guys. We're pumped to have you. All right, let's talk about this. So you're set to fight the legend that is Floyd Mayweather. Please tell me what made you agree to this fight.
Yeah, Floyd Mayweather is my opponent coming June 6th. You know, they're saying he's pretty good, one of the best boxers of all time. He's one of the best boxers of our generation. When I was presented with the opportunity to fight him as a showman, as an entertainer, as someone who's risen up to challenges his whole life, this was too exciting to turn down.
I can't knock you for not turning it down. That would be foolish. I mean, to be able to get in the ring and to make this money all at the same time, there's nothing wrong with that. I would ask, however, what level of sensitivity do you have to folks in the boxing profession that look at guys like yourself and your brother and say, you really may not deserve this opportunity? What do you say to that?
I'm actually fairly sensitive and will completely hear those people out because I understand. Because truthfully, it's not fair, right? Like I don't think. We definitely didn't climb the ranks and earn the spot to be fighting one of the best boxers of our generation in the typical sense. But you know, in other ways, we've worked our asses off, and I happen to be in a position where, again, this was an opportunity that came to fruition, and it's not something you say no to.
Before I ask you what I wanted to ask you, Logan, who gave you the shiner in sparring?
Yeah, man. We sparred a lot of pros on the island. I can't keep track, to be honest with you. We fight 3 days a week, three different guys every time we fight. So, man, who knows? But I will say we're in there working each other day in and day out.
So what I wanted to ask is the thing I respect about you and your brother is you guys respect the fight game. You prepare as hard as you can. You're sometimes criticized for the shape your opponent comes in. That's none of your business. Your business is get yourself in shape, train as hard as you can, fight as hard as you can. I see you both do that every time. But as a student of the fight game, as a guy who really loves it and respects it, how do you tell yourself that you have a chance in a boxing ring, even if he is 44 years old, as by your own admission, if not the best boxer of his generation? How do you get prepared to get in the ring and tell yourself, I'm going to beat him?
Yeah, you're asking good questions, Max. So I think the biggest thing here, and it's obvious, is my height, my weight, my reach, and my age. You know, there are weight classes in boxing for a reason. And I'm going to be weighing in 3 weight classes heavier than Floyd and probably coming into the fight 4 weight classes heavier. That's dangerous for him. Imagine hypothetically that I know what I'm doing. Imagine I'm a very good boxer. Imagine I'm beating pros and sparring time in and time again. You know, and Floyd comes in and he may realize he's in a little over his head because he's sparring a guy who's longer than him, stronger than him, powerful, has nothing to lose. Like, I'm going in there like, think about it. What happens if I win? You know, the world's axis stands still. Time stops. It's the genesis. It's the greatest upset in the history of combat sports. What happens if I lose? Nothing. Life goes on.
I can understand that. Let me ask you this question. You know, when folks look at you right now, and you just said you basically have nothing to lose, and I don't blame you for that at all. But there are people that are going to ask the question, and they're asking this question already. How serious, not in terms of your training, because we know that you train, you're in shape, you take it seriously, just like Max said, and you and your brother deserve a lot of credit for that. But what do you say to people that would ask, are you really serious about this from a professional perspective? In terms of these exhibitions, you're making more money than you would make if you were an up-and-coming fighter with a promoter, were, you know, sanctioned by the WBC or whoever the case may be. But do you plan on doing this professionally and really getting in the ring with modern day professionals who are not retired? Is that something that you plan on doing with your future? What do you say to that?
As long as it can bring an audience, man. Like, Jake and I want to be the biggest prize fighters on the planet. We want to fight people who will put on a big show with us, draw a large audience, and entertain a lot of people. That's what we want to do. This is not a 1-year, 2-year plan. This is a 3, 4, 5, 6, 7-year plan. And you know, unfortunately for our health, we've fallen in love with the sport. We just bought a warehouse here in Puerto Rico. We're turning it into our training stadium or our training facility. And so we're in, man. We're locked.
I mean, first of all, Logan, you have to stop cursing when you're doing broadcast. Like, you and your brother. This is the third time I had you on Max Kellerman radio show. I had your brother on Max on Boxing. You got to stop with the curses. Now, listen, do you already have brain damage? Who's making money outside of boxing chooses to go into boxing and risk everything? Like, what is it about boxing that has drawn you and your brother to it and to take it seriously?
Something about the primal nature of the sport. Two people getting inside a ring or an octagon, whatever shape it may be, and duking it out to see who the better one is so exciting to me. Like, I did that before I did YouTube and blew up on the internet. You know, I was a wrestler. I even took some like jujitsu classes and some striking classes in high school. I've always just been obsessed with it. You know, I love the UFC. I love combat sports. And the fact that I have the vessel to be able to do it myself and the work ethic is, you know, it's the most exciting thing on the planet. I told you this, Max. We're modern day gladiators. You know, it's the coolest thing in the world to me.
Listen, I imagine it gets tiresome having to apologize sort of every time you come on a show toward people who other fighters who feel like they're been waiting in line. But there are guys like Jermall Charlo and others who are like, I think it's great what they're doing. I'd like to fight on their undercard. They're bringing a new audience to the sport. You told me on my radio show that you and your brother would consider a fight. You would fight each other. Is that serious? Would you and Jake actually get in the ring and make an event? And how do you even build that up with all the trash talking you guys do before the event? How do you hit your brother in the face in front of millions of people?
Think about, well, that part's easy. Think about this. No one knows more about my brother and no one knows more about me than each other. Like, there's no person that could get under the other person's skin, Jake and me and vice versa. And I think that would be possibly one of the biggest combat sports events ever. Like, and it sounds laughable now, but what happens in 2 years, in 3 years, when we continue this sport and we continue beating people and winning and putting on great shows? Like, you know, everyone has something to say now, but we're just getting started. Like, what happens when we're actually good at this stuff?
I don't believe for one second that you should or would ever fight your brother, because I think y'all love each other to death and you wouldn't want to hurt each other. I don't they believe would. That for one second. I just don't. That's
These
just
two
me.
Are nuts. That, I think that, they would.
That's just me. But I will say I got a quick statement and then I got a last question. I love what y'all are doing because I think you're bringing attention to how fighters should be treated. The way you guys have gone about the business of marketing yourself, I think the boxing profession is being exposed because they're not taking care of the fighters enough, and the fighters should even have more appreciation for y'all because of the attention you're bringing to the sport and the fact that you're showing there's a different way to get paid rather than having to be at the mercy of promoters. So I love that about y'all. Let me talk about your brother because I want to get your reaction to this because I've been saying this. I applaud the fact that you're going in the ring with a boxer, retired or not. I applaud that. I like Jake. I really do. All right? But we know what he did to a basketball player, and we know what he did to a wrestler that came from the UFC. You are fighting a boxer. My issue with him is that, excuse me, you know, you could get arrested for what he did to those folks, even though they decided to step in the ring with him. They had no business in the ring with him. I'm just saying, but he did what he did to them. Is he going to fight a boxer the way you're fighting a boxer? And I like you and I like Jake. So I'm not, believe me, I just want to see y'all fight fighters. You're doing that. Is he going to do that? Because I like Jake, but I want him to fight fighters.
down the line, yes, he's going to fight. He absolutely will have to fight a traditional boxer. I will say he will be fighting a striker very soon. A striker. That's all I can say for now. But okay. My rebuttal would be, you know, professional boxers nowadays, the route they've mostly taken is fighting tomato cans, guys with horrible records, just to get knockouts and build theirs up. You know, Jake's three mm-hmm. fights in, and you know, he fought people who at the time looked like meaningful adversaries. You know, Nate Robinson, professional athlete, like, you know, an athlete, could see if he can box. Ben Askren, a professional fighter. I think Jake should take his time, man. Like, I don't really think he has to answer to anyone telling him who he should fight. He's three fights in and has three beautiful first round damn near KOs. And if you look at any other
you guys have to make big events when you fight. So how do you do that without a guy who has a huge experience advantage? You got to find a UFC star who's maybe not very advanced striking, et cetera, and build up
well,
like
I
that.
Well, I think Logan's certainly done that. Floyd Mayweather's 50-0, okay? So we'll leave it with
Dude,
that.
You're boxing Floyd Mayweather?
Yeah, he's boxing Floyd Mayweather.
That's what they're saying.
Play one-on-one with him. Do something other than box him.
The real money decision that we've all slept on is the fact that you set up your training facility in Puerto Rico, one of my favorite places
by me.
On the planet.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Let's go around the association to preview tonight's key storylines. The Mavericks are seeking a 2-0 series lead over the Clippers, who have lost four straight playoff games. Dallas hasn't held a 2-0 lead
since sweeping the Lakers in 2011 on the way to the title. The Lakers hoping to avoid a 2-0 series deficit. Heading into game two, Devin Booker can join teammate Chris Paul and become the fourth player in playoff history with 30 points in each of their first two career appearances. Now, can the Nets pad their first round lead over the Celtics? Boston has won four straight when trailing 2-0 in a series, including an 11-point win over the finals bound Heat last year. Here's a comparison of Brooklyn's big three to Miami's version a decade ago. The 2011 Heat team lost to Dallas in the NBA Finals, but won two rings over four total appearances. Stephen A., would this Nets team beat Miami's big three?
I believe they would.
Okay.
Because I think that Kevin Durant, James Harden, and Kyrie Irving are showstoppers. I think they're absolutely spectacular, and I think there would be no answer to stop them. You obviously have a chance in a lot of people's eyes. You got to man up, and this is one of the things I took the liberty of calling Isaiah Thomas the other day because I said, am I wrong in saying this? When the Pistons, when Isaiah Thomas, Joe Dumars, Bill Laimbeer, John Sally, Rick Mahorn, and James Edwards, and Vinny the Microwave Johnson, and all of them played for Detroit, Chuck Daly, you know, Daddy Bucks, as John Sally would call him, basically, God rest his soul, he would say to them, you have to man up. You guard your man. And so you can't double anybody on Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. You can't leave anybody open. So what you have to do is keep a body in front of them, make them make a contested three, or make them school you one-on-one like they are fully capable of doing. That's what you have to do with the Nets. You can't double anybody. Okay.
Especially not with Joe Harris there, too.
And that includes Miami. And my thing is with Miami, this same awesome team did lose to Tim Duncan, Manu Ginobili, Tony Parker, mm-hmm. did win, but took seven games to beat them the first go-round. With this Brooklyn team, San Antonio didn't have that kind of offense. No, I don't believe that Kevin Durant, James Harden, and Kyrie Irving would lose to the big three in Miami.
You may be right on paper, but it's way too early for me to agree with you because this is not just Kevin Durant, some abstract version of Kevin Durant. This is Kevin Durant coming off a catastrophic injury in the, you know, very next season. Let's see what he can do. This is like Kyrie and James Harden look real good, but James Harden has not yet done it in the playoffs, really. And let's see if Kyrie can keep his head on his shoulders, right? Like, so there are question marks, Stephen A. You got to get back to me. This Nets big three has played what, including the postseason, nine games together?
Eight
in the regular season, I think, and now one in the postseason. So I think it's nine now. And what are they, 6-3?
Research gave me eight, but you could be right.
It was eight in the regular season. Yeah. And get back to me when they win 26 consecutive games, which is what the Heat did, right, that season.
Eight is nothing.
Right. They haven't done it yet. Now, that Heat team, I agree, on paper, when you break it down, the big three can't do what this big three can do. No big three ever can do on paper what this big three can do. And I'm predicting they're going to do it. And I think James Harden's going to be Finals MVP. But now they got to go out and do it. They haven't done it yet. I'm not going to say, yes, they'll take out a big three won back-to-back chips.
I'm sorry, Max. What's today's date? Today's May 25th. 2021, right?
That's right.
If you had the temerity, the unmitigated gall, to sit up there and say, no, they wouldn't beat the big three. And are you aware, is this something's going to happen to him? You're going to lose your job?
I have the You'll mitigated goal. I don't have the unmitigated.
Mitigated. Okay. You're going to lose your job? You're going to get fired?
That's not the point.
The point is this. No. The point is, the question is, what do we think today, right now, do you believe that the big three would beat the big three in Miami? This is not a crime. Max, I got your back, bro. Right, there's nothing going to happen.
Between you and me.
There's nothing going to happen.
No one else is listening.
There's nothing going to happen.
No one else is listening. Just you and me.
What's going to happen, Matt?
Between you and me, this Nets big three is the best big three of all time. Between you and me.
Appreciate it.
But now they got to go out and do it. Stay healthy.
I understand that. But on May 25th, who do you believe would win if they had to play each other? That's all. It's not a crime.
It's just pure hypothetical now because these dudes haven't done it yet. They've got nine games together.
You're off the hot seat. I got more for you. After the game one loss to the Suns, Charles Barkley isn't convinced that the Lakers have what it takes to repeat. Sir Charles saying this on TNT, nobody is afraid of them. Max?
Yeah.
What do the Lakers need to do to strike fear in opponents?
Well, right now, Chuck is exactly right. No one's fearing the Lakers. Oh, that could turn just like that on a dime. What do they have to do? LeBron has to look like LeBron. AD has to look like AD. By the way, hitting some shots from the outside. Remember, I said last postseason, he was hitting from three unlike he'd hit in his career. It's series after series. Can he still do that? And if not, can he be AD in other ways? If LeBron and AD are playing like their real selves, and all it takes is a couple guys, KCP, a couple guys getting hot from the outside, two games like that, the whole Western Conference will fear them. You know how quickly it changes? The Clippers were accused of tanking to avoid them, right? Like, just like that, it can change.
Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
Nobody's scared of the Lakers. You respect them, significantly so, but you don't fear them. You don't fear getting embarrassed. You don't fear getting schooled. You don't fear getting annihilated. I'm going to take it a step further. The biggest reason I have never put LeBron James as number one is because there's never been a time when LeBron James has instilled fear in anyone.
Oh, come on.
Listen.
Come on.
Let me explain. His jump shot once upon a time was suspect, and his free throws have always been suspect. So the lack of consistency when it came to those two things, you respected him, you knew he was great, you knew you had to bring your A game in order to have a chance, you knew he was superior to you, but you didn't fear complete annihilation from LeBron James.
He just gentleman swept the Western Conference last year.
Excuse me. I'm going to tell you again.
He gentleman swept the Western Conference.
I'm not giving you a basketball analysis. I'm giving you fact based on all the people that I have to. They never feared
but,
him.
Maybe that's the problem.
They what never about feared game them. Two after Anthony Davis choked and now he comes out, he takes all the responsibility,
ladies,
and is going to be a man on a mission?
Ladies and gentlemen, I never said he's not great. I didn't say anything like that.
Look at that full
I
just screen, said, by the way, right
fear?
There.
You mean by fear like a clutch closer?
You know how you got, you know how you scared to death to even look at Jordan wrong?
Because what he did.
That's not LeBron.
That's what I'm saying. Kobe, stuff like that. That's what I'm saying.
All right. We'll keep it moving here, guys. Today marks the one-year anniversary of George Floyd's murder. Last night, the NBA Social Justice Coalition called on the U.S. Senate to pass the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act as a way to honor Floyd and others who have been victims of police brutality. The act would ban chokeholds and qualified immunity for law enforcement while creating national standards for policing to bolster accountability. The bill has already been passed in the U.S. House, and the death of George Floyd in the video that showed convicted police officer Derek Chauvin kneeling on Floyd's neck for more than 9 minutes became a catalyst in the sports world for racial and social justice. Here's Doug Glanville with his thoughts on the year since Floyd's death.
Just 1 year ago, on just another day, our lives were eclipsed by a singular death. The glare exposed that the eyes of justice had been peeking from beneath its blindfold, weighing down the guilty side of the scales with a color-coded use of force. Then justice flailed around desperately, seeking responses to questions that would divert our attention from the man whose inert blackness was made indistinguishable from his asphalt grave. Why didn't he just comply? Why didn't he just listen? Answers that should never be written in a sentence of death over a counterfeit truth. We must remember that so many others have had justice turned against their innocence, swept up as necessary collateral damage to calm privileges imagination. Suspects for just waiting at a Starbucks, just barbecuing at a park, just moving into an apartment, just babysitting, just working out at a gym, just swimming in a pool, just making a phone call from the lobby, just existing. Just did not save them. Others simply stopped existing, gone when they were just sleeping in their bed, just walking out of a garage, just reaching for their driver's license, just going for a jog, just scared that the matter of their life would not matter to anyone who might take it. Still, the eclipse passed, and after just one revolution, and streets full of every color of the rainbow. Over the horizon came a judgment.
Find the defendant guilty. Yeah!
A glimpse of what it means to make someone matter. Less than 10 minutes to take a life, less than 10 hours to account for a life taken. A day when justice could not find reason in the unreasonable, even when history has repeatedly done just that. We found that the blue line was not written in the permanence of blood, that officers loyal to their duty can testify to a higher truth, not just a truth that places their unity above our oxygen. Just is what justice does. It acts, even in the darkness, whether the world is recording or not. Now, just 1 year has passed, and we cannot just stop. Not while a just law awaits passage, while others just await justice. One verdict does not make assurances for the next encounter. Without real change, we will just circle ourselves in an unproductive binary dance, and justice will continue to live in two worlds. One will continue to justify second-class citizenship. The other will fight for our equal and shared humanity. Sight unseen, we must purchase a future that recalibrates the scales of justice and renews the blindfolded oath to ensure just means justice for all.
Excellent, excellent job by Doug Glanville there. Beautiful piece. Stephen A., how has the sports world been a catalyst here over the last year?
By giving a voice to the voiceless and accepting the responsibility of doing just that. And also using the cachet that they have available to them to influence folks in powerful positions who happen to look differently than them, come from different cultural backgrounds than they come from, basically white individuals, to use their cachet, their prowess, their power, their positioning to facilitate the kind of things that they're looking for, which is what you alluded to at the start of the speech when you talked about what they're taking to Capitol Hill. And so I think that it's incredibly important to understand that the modern-day athlete and the modern-day sports world is more politically conscientious than they've been in recent memory. It is a beautiful, beautiful thing. And as a result, it's going to assist in holding everybody accountable. And that's the closest you can get to justice.
I think entertainment has been, including in sports, has been one of the avenues available to African-Americans to, into kind of mainstream success. And the idea is kind of like distract us. And I think what a lot of athletes
or entertain have done,
distract. And I think what a lot of athletes have said is essentially black people know this, and a lot of people who understand history know this. Black life has always been cheap in this country. And even if it's more expensive than it used to be, like when it was free, right? Like when they were owned, athletes were saying we're tired of taking a discount. No more discounts on black life. And I think in that way, they've been among the loudest voices and have made an important contribution.
I just want to say one thing quickly. I know I mentioned the NBA with that lead in, but the WNBA also done a phenomenal job, especially in the bubble and all the efforts put in. And we saw the documentary by Chinua Ogbuike.
It was fantastic.
Yes.
Yes.
That 30 for 30 piece where it touched on, you know, some of the efforts, et cetera. And I just said this earlier, my thoughts really with George Floyd's daughter, Gianna, and all his loved ones today, because, again, we had a little bit of justice with the conviction, but they're never going to see their father again. We'll leave it there. See you guys all tomorrow. Have a fabulous day.